Blog Talk Radio.
Oh boy. It's getting more and more fun around here all the time, I tell ya. Welcome to Eerie House. Dale K from Scoop Show, and recently of Eerie House. And I'm just sitting here with my diet orange soda, ready for another broadcast day. How about that? A special day, a Sunday. A special show with a special guest. Gar the Ghoul, welcome.
Gar the Ghoul is here with sundae and whipped cream and topping stuff. Sure, why not?
Why not? Hey, the whole thing. Zing, zing.
And no, is the ghost cow? There it is. Okay, ghost cow's here.
The other
day
you brought up...
Got my technical squad waiting.
The other day you inspired me. You brought up an interesting idea for... a topic to discuss of things that might have been, because you were talking about the old television Ghostbusters show with Forrest Tucker.
The original in the 70s, yes.
Yes. So, anyway, that just inspired me. I thought, well, there's a lot of things that, you know, we know about. We know little tidbits here we've learned from reading and from our interest in the genre of projects that maybe... didn't get made, but should have been. What would have happened? What might have happened? So that's what I thought we'd talk about today.
Yeah. One thing about the Ghostbusters, there's actually a DVD out there, and many of the individuals that were tied in, the worker people that created it and made it what it was, spoke. They spoke about all the different things about it. And it was a great premise. It wasn't a cartoon. It was very different in that it was a stage act. It was live right there, real actors. Larry Storch and, I'm going to get it wrong, Forrest Tucker? No, right? Yes?
Yes, correct.
Yes, okay. And Byrne, Bob Burns, Gorilla Man?
Really?
Yeah, Bob Burns was the gorilla, Tracy.
Bob Burns.
The Bob Burns, yes. And they were both Larry Storch and Forrest Tucker, because he was in awe of working with these two guys, and so
he was in awe. He was in awe.
Yeah, he was in awe of working with and so he was. Timid, yeah, he was like, wow, you know, these guys, I don't want to mess up in front of these guys and ruin what they're doing. And they just adored him. It just worked, bam. And I think the thing was, this is kind of funny. The thing was, they had to find a gorilla because they were looking, we need a gorilla for this. I don't know why they came up with that, but they did. And so they had auditions. And in the auditions, they had all these guys, you know, and they had. A picture walking into a small room, 10 by 12 or something like that, and chairs around the perimeter, and all these people dressed up in their gorilla suits. Well, of course, Bob Burns would have had the best gorilla suit. And so they looked around at all these talents and stuff, and some of them were really too thin and maybe, you know, too short or whatever. And you see Bob Burns, and he's sitting there in his gorilla suit, one leg over his knee, and he has Variety open, and he's reading it. And they just said, that's our gorilla.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Go ahead. No,
okay.
No, you first.
So they had the team. And then they went and they got that car. If you remember in the TV show, there was always the car. There was the car, the secret message of what ghosts they need to find and bust, and it would explode. I think it always exploded on Tracy, on the gorilla. I don't know why. And Larry Storch was there. But they always had to go in this car, and they found this old car, just this crazy, unique car that they had. And they said it barely drove. It barely worked. And they would always... they had this stretch of road that they would always go to, and this was filmed, I think, in California. Very hot. The Bob Burns in the gorilla suit, and he's driving, and he's like, "Oh my God, it's so hot!" You know, and he was the driver though. So they had to just make sure that he had opportunities to get out of the suit and cool down quite a bit. But really a great premise for a TV show.
And yeah, I wonder what could have been if that had come to pass.
And well, they only did like 13 episodes. And it's like, I know you didn't tap the well dry, but for whatever reasons,
yeah.
I believe it
there was
a yes?
No, there was a show very much from the same era that was a favorite of mine. It only lasted like a season or two. I was very, very young when it came on television.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called It's About Time.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I had not seen it for years until recent, and I mean like a good 40-some years, until recently Antenna TV started broadcasting them on Sunday morning.
It's about time, it's about space, it's about da-da-da,
mm-hmm.
right? Something like that?
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
here, upon further study, now being an adult, it was put together by Sherwood Schwartz, and you could see so many similarities to Gilligan's Island.
Okay. I'm going to have to look that one up. It's in my head, but it's way back there behind a door I can't open.
You can find some episodes on YouTube of It's About Time.
Right.
But if you got an antenna and you can pick up Antenna TV, hey, it's on Sunday mornings usually. I don't know. They got their Halloween schedule this weekend.
Right.
So I got my Addams Family fix. But
well, there you
no,
go.
No, it was
yeah,
it
you're,
was a
you're
neat
talking
show.
About
the
dusting
premise
those
was,
off.
The premises of the show were these astronauts go back in time, and a lot of the situations and the characters were very similar to the Gilligan format, you know. And who knows if that would have lasted. At the end of the series, I think they were running out of ideas. It only lasted like a season, maybe a season and a half.
Right.
Then they had the cave family that they had befriended come back to modern times with them.
And there was also a little comedy short starring, I lost his name, the guy from Gilligan. Far
Trail?
Out Space Nuts. Remember those?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they had Jim Nabors. This is so weird. Jim Nabors and Ruth Buzzy as android robots that abduct a babysitter and her charge and take them off into time called the Lost Saucer. Remember that one?
No, wow.
That's really kind of out there.
Yeah.
And then, we had spoken earlier about the Monster Squad, which was totally just, it was Batman with monsters. The monsters had utility belts.
Oh, cool.
The guy in the museum had a crime computer. They had the monster van. I mean, it was, the only thing they were missing was like the monster signal to put out there in the clouds.
Yeah.
Maybe the outline of Frankenstein monster's head or something.
There you go.
But yeah, they had the Wolfman, the Dracula, they had, and they had the Frankenstein's monster, and they had funny names for them all. And I think that the wolf's name was Bruce W. Wolf, and the W was for where.
Of course.
Yeah. Well. So yeah. And it was. The Frankenstein monster in there, I can't remember if they did name him Frank, middle initial N, and then Stein or not.
Yeah.
And he was constantly talking about, this arm isn't mine. This leg isn't mine, you know, or something. He was constantly talking about odd body parts.
That could get out of hand.
Yeah,
within
limits.
Yes. You know, there have been a lot of projects that didn't get finished, and one of my favorite that I'd like to know a lot more about, the creator of King Kong, Marion C. Cooper, produced it, and the effects were done by Willis O'Brien. Well, Willis O'Brien was involved with a project that never got finished called Creation, and it was a similar premise to King Kong in that people go to a deserted island and there's dinosaurs on there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Creation had an adventure story, you know, around the dinosaurs and the people that could go to the island. But the footage that he put together for it, showing how he was going to use dinosaurs, much as he did in The Lost World, is what got him the gig. That's what got him the gig to do King Kong. But what an amazing project that would have been if that had gotten off the ground.
There have been a lot of projects that I've heard about, movies and TV shows and stuff like that, that they were teased in fan magazines. One of them was the comic. I don't remember what it was called, the Comic Buyer's Guide. I don't think that. It was like Comic Scene or something like that. And then Wizard and all kinds of other things. And they cross genres between science fiction and comic books and comic book characters and all. And there was a whole bunch. It was like, there's buzz on the wire that this is going to come your way, and it was going to be like, oh, this is going to be great. I'd like to see this. And nothing ever happened. I wish I could think of a specific. I remember for the longest time there was word of, and this was like, it had to be in the 90s or 80s or something, was we're bringing the Fantastic Four to the theater. We're going to bring it into the big screen. And it never happened until Corman got hold of it, and then he did his thing, and it never, nothing ever, I think the only thing that existed was bootlegs. I think now you can get them, but
believe me,
it was
going to
be
so
amazing, because it was going to be, hey, there's your heroes right on screen. It was like, how long, well, we had, and that was another flash in the pan, remember the live-action Spider-Man with Hammond?
Lord. You mean the television program?
Yes. Okay.
Oh, that was hideous. It was.
And it was outside of my knowledge because didn't have the internet and all the connections we have now. It was the flip side of that is the Japanese version. And the Japanese version is insane. It's great.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
You know, it's funny, too, that I knew in the 70s that they'd never be able to do a good Fantastic Four Spider-Man in the movies until special effects changed that. You know, once the advent of CGI, you could really make – the problem I had with live actors, none of them moved like Spider-Man moved. He was very spidery in his movements and very athletic, and you know what I mean? Almost like a
gymnast.
In
the Japanese version, it was a live-action Japanese version. That guy, whoever's in there, does a darn good job. I was amazed.
Yeah, I haven't
seen
it.
It's like Kung Fu and Spider-Man together.
Oh, jeez. That's a frightening
thought. I can't believe you've never seen this. You've never seen the Japanese.
No, I never have.
Oh, okay. That'll be a thing for you to discover on your own. And you're going to Gar.
I just earned a Gar demerit. Oh, my God. What am I going to do? Gar demerit for having
a
never seen.
Demerit. No, it's something to expand your horizons. The Spider-Man Japanese version. Check it out. It's those Power Ranger people. This was pre-Power Rangers, and
gotcha.
Spider-Man at a certain point in time has to go get inside a robot to beat up another robot. So it's like Ultraman, Kung Fu, Spider-Man, live action. Hilarious.
That's like everything. Yay. But I could see somebody who's trained for martial arts playing a more believable Spider-Man with his
exactly
with his
movement. Yes. And
I can definitely see that.
And the web stuff that they got, so much better than the one string of nylon rope that Hammond had or whatever that was.
Yeah.
Or they would cartoon over it or something. I can't remember. It was like the Electric Company Spider-Man where they would cartoon over a web. There, and then someone struggling with a net or.
Who knows?
I got to see something I had never seen. Of course, I've seen Godzilla, and I've seen King Kong. I've seen this. I just recently saw it, and it had to be in the 80s or 90s. I'm not familiar. I'm not all that. A few shows ago, you had a Godzilla-themed show, I think. And
With Ormsby, right.
Yeah, with Ormsby. Yeah, and it was fantastic. But one of the things I saw when it was more current, they were using digital cameras and they had newer cars. But one thing was you couldn't get invested in any character in there that was human because the monsters would kill them.
Yes.
Right when you see, oh, that's a great character. I wonder what's going on. Oh, the monster killed him. I mean, the loss of fake life in that one film. It had King Kong, not King Kong. It had Godzilla, Gamera. There's one with he has multiple heads. It's like a dragon.
Oh, Ghidra. Yeah. Hydra.
Yeah, and then it had one creature with the big weird ears that had a horn, and he would tunnel under the earth. Again,
I think that's
I wish
Theragun,
I knew more,
but I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's somebody out there that knows all this that is shaking their head and going, "Gar, you're speaking."
Yeah, I know. Same here.
You're blathering on. But anyway, it was a great film, a newer film, but the collateral damage was insane. And you don't see that in American films. You don't see that.
That was probably Attack of the Monsters or War of the Monsters or whatever. But they capitalized on the various monsters and characters that people jumped onto. And in the same way, segue time.
Right.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
How much did you like the original House of Frankenstein? The 1944 flick with, Karloff, Chaney Jr.'s in it. John Carradine plays Dracula.
This is when they were combining characters. They were, like, trying to shove as many.
Universal was clearly one of the first with the franchises where they had the monsters take, you know, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Then you started getting the House movies where they started bringing in all the monsters.
Right.
If you recall,
I'm not sure if this is the right one, where there's this beautiful actress and she has a hump, and they kill her off.
That would be House of Dracula,
nurse.
which is very similar. But it,
right,
it, House of
Frankenstein, and I was like, why did they kill off the nurse? She was beautiful. They could have gotten rid of the hump. She would have been okay. Blah blah.
Well, that was the reason she's hanging around the doctor. But getting back to House of Frankenstein, that was the first one where Universal said, "Yeah, let's have a monster party," you know.
Right.
Well, many people I found do not know that originally they intended to have, in addition to, you know, the Frankenstein monster, the werewolf,
right,
and Dracula,
mm-hmm,
and they had a hunchback-type character,
mm-hmm,
which was played by J. Carroll Nash.
Okay, I'm familiar with that guy, yep.
Yeah, he's cool as heck. He played Daniel the Hunchback.
And he also
Japanese
guy in a Batman film, but anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. They were supposed to include how cool would it have been if they had included the mummy, the ape woman, and the mad ghoul, and possibly even the invisible man?
Well,
I mean,
then they were missing one. There's one key component out of all of that they had to have. And I apologize for not remembering her name, but the screaming woman from The Invisible Man should have been in every Universal film they made.
Yeah.
I loved her. She was amazing. She had a great scream and that voice in the face. Oh, wow. Just.
Yeah. I confess, I have a strange fixation for the actresses from the 40s, like Evelyn Anchors and Ilona Massey. And oh, yeah. Those are my monster girls right there.
Yeah. The thing about those films, it was a bigger bang for your buck. Let's toss all those monsters in. Let's get, because what are we shooting for? We're shooting for how many seats can we fill? So if let's say that there's a kid out there that likes Frankenstein but doesn't like Dracula. If they're both in the same film, that kid's going to go. Or vice versa. Or doesn't like Gilman but likes the werewolf. You know, well, they're all in there. Let's go. So
right.
There's also a merchandising aspect from all this. And, I think the end product was, it was successful, even though Universal saw the decline. And I don't know if they helped to decline it by making movies that were less than spectacular than they could have been, I guess. Not really sure what that decline was.
Well, I think it's very similar to, like, we get bombarded by sequels.
Mm-hmm.
Jason 13 and Halloween 75 and
on the Moon. I'm sorry, you got me. I'm dead. All right. You done it.
Well,
that was
in the same way Universal did Son of, Daughter of, blah, 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 you know, and great grandnephew twice removed of the mummy's left bandage.
Right.
I don't know.
Dracula meets Billy the Kid. Okay, you got me. I'm done.
I know. Jesse James meets Frankenstein. What a twin spin that would
be. Yeah, Frankenstein in the Old West.
Why not?
So,
No, but you know, and but how cool would that have been? I don't know. It might have cheapened it further, and you know, they finally wrapped everything up with the Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, where they
right, and they were flogging that horse so bad it couldn't walk anymore. You know.
Yeah.
Is there a chat today? I don't see anything for chat. Is there a chat?
There is a chat. It's kind of quiet today.
Okay, I don't see it on my little doodad, but oh well.
Oh, it's there. Alpha Trope is in there, joined us, and
maybe I'm not on the right page. It says Area House Number 19, Halloween, etc. And I refreshed it. Let me refresh it.
I don't know. Alpha Trope was real excited when you mentioned Monster Squad, and he also wrote that he had the Hot Wheels van. The Monster Squad Hot Wheels
yes.
van.
Yeah, there were. Oh, there, okay. There were not only that, because I can go into that a little bit because I remember. And I wish I saw a chat, but I don't see the darn chat. There were Monster Squad got a few Ben Cooper Halloween costumes. They got Dracula and they got the Wolf Guy, but they didn't get Frankenstein, which was odd. Yeah. And they didn't get his name wasn't Beaver. Walt from the who was the human that whatever his name I can't remember what his name was on Love Boat. Hopper, Woody, Chopper, Chipper, I can't remember. He was on the Love Boat. Do you remember his name?
No, I didn't watch it. After
you
I heard
never watched the Love
voice,
Boat,
that was enough for me. That was enough.
Welcome
boat.
To the Love Boat. Yeah, it was like and that was Ernie. What's his Horvath?
That was
Gilardi.
Yeah,
yeah. There you go. Welcome
to the Love Boat.
Hold
this
on,
week
we got
on
a caller.
Fantasy Island.
Yeah.
Hold on, brother. We got a caller here before we wrap up the show.
Oh,
tonight.
Cool. All right.
Hi, caller. Thanks for calling Erie House Radio. How's it going?
It's going well. Hello, Gar. This is WXEX.
Hello, WXEX. Blablabla to you. Wow. A caller in. Hey, how are you?
Good, good. I was listening to what you guys were talking about, and I don't know. I came in late eating dinner. Sorry about that. I missed the first few minutes. Did you all mention the passing of Zachary?
Yesterday.
Well, we discussed that on radio
that?
Briefly yesterday, but thanks for bringing that up. We kind of paid our respects to him briefly yesterday. On the radio. Yeah, you know, 98 years old, God bless him.
Well, thing I wanted to mention is because Gar does a really fun live show every week.
As we know.
It's great. And these horror hosts from our youth that we all remember, various markets and so on, what was great was that they were, even though maybe they were recorded on videotape, they were essentially live.
Yes.
Because in the 60s, videotape was so expensive that they would use the same tape over and over.
That's why
and
there's very little left of the classic horror hosts. It's very difficult to find.
And so obviously when these great bits occurred, somebody would stealthily hide the recording away for posterity. Because nobody was recording horror shows on kinescopes. They were bicycling around these 16-millimeter films and doing the ins and outs every week and using the same tape over and over. So it's great that we have some of these classic bits from Zachary and from Ernie Anderson in the Midwest as his character. As Gar is well aware, his youthful host doesn't have more than about 10 or 11 minutes of footage that exists from the heyday of his program.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it's great that people squirrel these things away. Some people have reel-to-reel audio recordings, and some of that stuff is out there, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't transfer it or dub it to get it on the air, but I love old classic video.
Yeah, well, we got plenty of that for you on Eerie House as well, Eerie House TV tonight. Real quick, before we sign off, right now, Screaming Horror Theater is presenting Alice in Wonderland. And then later on, about 8 o'clock, comes The Terror, hosted by Rigor Mortis and Night Angel. And then Weirdness Really Bad Movie at 10 o'clock with their Halloween show and their movie, White Gorilla. That's on Eerie House TV. Go to Facebook and check it out. Get the link. You need to watch on your computer or PC, Eerie House Television. Horror hosts in their movies. Good stuff.
Yeah, and WXEX TV, you can stay on the line. There's another 15 minutes if you want to hang out with the conversation.
Yeah, I'll have to
listen. There's bonus time. The live portion of our show is going to end in about, say 5 minutes, maybe four or so.
Super.
And it's recorded for people that go and listen into the archive. So, if you want to continue the conversation, please join us.
Well, and Gar has things that go wrong all the time on his show. Lights go out. Can't push the right button. The crew in the control room are never there when he's calling for stuff to be played. It's great stuff.
Yeah, I got my technicians all ready.
And there they are now.
And the ghost cow. Yeah, there it is. When I explain, because I try to explain to people that drop in that are going, what is this? What am I seeing? Why do you look weird? What is this thing behind you that looks so creepy? And I explain to them, I am presenting an ode, O-D-E, to local television horror movie hosts of the past, and I will cobble together little bits and pieces that I can find of horror hosts and show them and enjoy just those few minutes that we have with them. That was the premise before I found the first bit of white clown face makeup stuff was, what am I going to do? And it's an ode. I am not the guy, although people have said, people have said some very positive things about me, and I appreciate that. I'm just someone that is so happy to have lived through it and try to pass it on to so others can enjoy.
I think that's a lot of horror hosts are doing, Gar. That's what Eerie House is all about, is helping horror hosts get their stuff seen by people that might not otherwise have seen it. And this show is great when gentlemen like yourselves, both of you, call in and share your memory, share your experiences of what it was like when you watch your favorite horror host, or been to your trade shows and met people. I just live for these stories.
The biggest detractor I have is that my memory is going, and so unfortunately, the large scale of memories that I had of my horror host is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's fun to be able to see. Those 10 minutes of the original, what they had with my horror host. Then he traveled. This guy, I can work here, I can work there. And so he moved outside of the viewing area and did stuff out and away from all of that. And I saw those, and some of those I was like, that's really funny. But it's not his set, and there's additional people, and some of the things aren't as funny as what I remember they were. But then again, I could have a jaded memory on this, you know? Maybe it was never as funny as I thought it was. I don't know.
Well, I had
really
that
good
experience watching old videos of the Ghoul Show in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
how much more polished he was and how he had honed his sense of timing by the time he was doing show when he returned to Cleveland in the 80s, when I had the
mm-hmm.
opportunity to work with him, how much he honed his show and how perfected it was. It was a much better product, I think.
My jaw dropped the first time I ever saw the original Svengoolie, because the guy played guitar, played piano, told jokes, did skits. just full complete. That was boom. If you wanted a horror host, went back and there it was.
The guy, G. Bishop, he was something else. And, he had many, many talents, and he was one of the original pioneers in the '60s.
The guys that did the horror hosting were not afraid to work without a net.
No, they weren't. But real quick, before you finish that thought, I just want to thank our live audience once again for listening to Erie House Radio. We'll be back next Saturday at 6:30 Eastern. See you next time. Bye-bye. And we're in our bonus time. Yay, bonus time.
Yay. Yeah, now we...
Now
the
I can take my pants
back.
Off. No.
But yeah, WXEX-TV8, you were speaking about definitely playing without a net. When I started doing this, I had no idea that there were no nets included at all, and there aren't.
Well, I think that, you know, you hear a lot of, you hear the stories from these hosts when they're interviewed many years later, and they're basically saying they knew what the film was going to be that was going to be played during their program that they were recording the ins and outs for, but they didn't, many of them didn't have a script. They knew that the open had to be a minute and 30 seconds. They knew that
right.
The first cut, the first break or the first toss to a break was going to be 30 seconds. So they just had to come up with something thematically or related. And most of these folks were very funny, quick-witted individuals to start with.
Yeah.
And that's why the station would pull them from whatever department they were in and put them in front of a camera.
Yeah, we had weathermen, and the thing with Goulardi that was funny is he'd be across the street in the bar drinking right up until the time it was time to film, and they'd have to send a boy to go get him. He'd be, you know, smoking a cigarette on the way across the street, and hey, all right, okay, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's how good this guy was. And like you said, flying by the seat of his pants often. You know, he had a general idea where he wanted to go, but he just kind of,
and what was so great about these programs, after these hosts got started, the crew, whoever they might be, young people, part-timers, or whoever was working in the station on the production team, would kind of get it right away. And if it was really something fun that they could see that the talent was doing, oftentimes that made everybody else that much better because they
absolutely
would get involved. And
I know,
like,
that
hey.
That personally from working with the Ghoul in the early 80s, he would address the camera. He had a name for him, Camera 4. He always addressed it, which he borrowed from Goulardi, but eventually brought the young man in on a few skits. And yeah, I mean, you could tell that they were much more enthusiastic about doing those kind of shows than doing a cooking show, doing a, nothing against cooking shows, but, you know, something that they might find more mundane that wasn't out there like a horror host show.
Well, I think a lot of times the talent was concerned about what he had to do, and some of these, the crew members, let's just say the audio guy would, before the session, would get together a couple of dozen drops that the talent knew nothing about. And then as the show progressed, he would play a drop or two, and the talent would get to react to it. You know,
awesome.
A sound effect of something happening or music. It's great stuff. And you, later on, you got these zoo formats on the radio doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Good morning,
yeah,
zoo.
I mean, These guys were pioneers. They took, I think, the tradition of the old-fashioned spook shows and brought them to your television. And some of them that were clever with the effects, like Fritz the Night Owl and a few others, that either their crew or themselves pioneered the green screening process, which they used to call chroma key back then. They would key out a certain color, and that's how they could put somebody in the middle of a desert island or whatever.
Well, where else would a technical director get to use an oscillating wipe on the switcher except on a horror show?
Absolutely.
They had a guy in Tampa, and I've said it before, Dr. Paul Bearer, and he was a pallbearer, and he had a glass eye. One eye was glass, and what he would do before each show was he'd take that eye that was established center, and he put his finger on it, move it to the right. So he always looked like he was looking in various different directions. Did that
kinda
on purpose.
Like Marty Feldman.
Well, yeah, except Marty Feldman, it was an illness And
yes,
that's what happened to his eyes. Before that, he didn't have it. But yeah, but he was purposely, you know, hey, we're gonna zinc this over, and he would do that. But okay, what was I talking about?
Paul Bearer.
I was talking about what were you talking about before Paul Bearer? Dr. Paul Bearer. What he did one thing was they did this with the green screen somehow, somebody in a green costume or something. They took and they put his head on a mantle on the set. He took his head off and put it, and that was a special effect in 1970-something, I don't know. I think it was him. I really think it was him. And they said, we didn't think we could get away with doing it. But they did, and it came off good.
That's great.
Crazy.
That's great.
A special effect. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry I got lost there in my own head. I need to change heads every once in a while.
But I mentioned something about this, and I'll say this, and I'm not sure if everybody's aware of it, but the stations may have gotten the package for films, but they didn't have all of the films in the package at the station at one time.
That's
the
right.
Package was bicycling all around. So you'd get several reels from the Trailways bus station because they didn't have UPS back then.
Right.
You'd go to the Trailways station, pick up the films, and the film editor would look at the film and say, well, we're going to have to cut for the show. We've got a two-hour show. We've got so many minutes of commercials. We're going to have to cut out so much. Well, the film had already been cut to heck because it's been spliced from every market, and
right,
those film editors would have to set those clips aside and put them back in when the show was done.
Yep.
Because they'd run the film live. They wouldn't necessarily produce a two-hour show. They would have the ins and outs on the tape machine and have the film that was edited to time on a film chain, and the film and the tapes would be rolled live during the air period. There wasn't necessarily a pre-produced two-hour show.
Tell the
right
anecdote about Bowman Body on Soul Train.
Well, the local station, WXEX, had the Soul Train package, and they had the Soul Train shows. Well, somebody in-house on the engineering staff thought it would be funny to put in a clip from an earlier Bowman episode where Bowman was dancing to some music. So they did a couple of the tape is bicycled to them from the Trailway station to the station.
Mm-hmm.
They go and do several video insert edits on the tape. Now, keep in mind, this is not a copy that's come down via satellite. This is a tape
right
that's being bicycled around. They take the master tape that is in distribution and put in video insert edits on the master tape. So that means the next station down the line and the next station and the next station are going
to
have Bowman dancing. And that happened. And it took several stations because nobody necessarily watches the show. When it comes in,
right,
it's got the format sheet on it. So,
whatever, yeah.
So it's put on the log as such. Nobody views it. And so it took several stations to make a note and said, hey, this tape's got some funny business in it. And the station ended up having to make another dub and get another dub out there, which back in the day, you know, that was an expense.
Yeah.
And that was, I think Bowman says that it ended up in Cleveland or in Chicago somewhere where they finally stopped it.
I love that story because it's like you have these stations that have no idea who Bowman Body or Shock Theater is in their area. They have someone else or they have no one. And all of a sudden you see this guy and he's dressed up, you know, and he's got dark eyes and white face and he's wearing a cape and he's dancing in Soul Train. And you're going like,
it was very funny in our market at midnight.
Right.
But if you're talking about, you know, Philadelphia, it makes
right
no sense at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
They're like,
yeah,
this is not an original Soul Train dancer or whatever.
That's a great story.
I love
that's
that
tremendous
one.
I
have the luxury of having WXEX TV8 in my ears sometimes, unfortunately not live, cause, and he said, I wish there was a way that I could get that cane and pull you off stage because sometimes you tell too many jokes and you need to stop. Because I get going, and I'm enjoying myself, but it's like, yeah, we're done with jokes, man.
Gar's other name is Evan Rude. because once he gets wound up, he doesn't stop.
Right.
And
no, he doesn't. Oh, that's okay.
What makes him fun. That's what makes him fun. He just gets on a roll. And you know,
well,
obviously,
yeah, I don't
if this
turning
was
them loose.
On television, there would be a producer or somebody saying, wrap him up.
Yeah.
But when he doesn't have anybody to talk to, he just goes to town, and it's a long journey sometimes.
It is. yesterday I got wound up on the videos I show, sidebar to the feature presentation. I danced to the videos, and one of them is Funky Town. I danced to that, and there were a few others, and I was sitting there dancing and doing. And at the end of the show, I'm like, man, I'm really kind of sweaty because I was doing all the dancing. Everybody's going like, look at Gar. He's really – and it's like I'm getting an aerobic workout. And
Gar's show is terribly entertaining, and that's good when it's called Horrible Harder. It's terribly entertaining.
Terribly.
But,
emphasis on terrible.
But and what's neat is the program that he uses to get the show in front of everybody is actually recorded. But if he played the show back somewhere for 3.5 hours or 4 hours, the show might not make a lot of sense sometimes because he does so much communicating with his chatters live.
With the live audience, yeah.
And that's one of the things we've discussed that's unique to his show is that when you watched your horror host on television, you may have shouted at the screen, but your horror host would have never heard you. Well, we can shout at him and write messages, and he responds instantaneously.
Yep.
There are a number of people that actually sometimes – could be called producers of the show because we cry out for videos for him to play.
Right.
Well,
yep.
It's a unique and it's a different kind of show. We're glad to have Gar here as a guest.
Thank you. Blah, blah.
With just a couple of minutes, they cut us off at the end without the without benefit of the British lady giving me a countdown in this
so
bonus
we'll
time.
Cut
so
the
if,
phone off, and it's not to be – rude or anything. It's abrupt.
Exactly. Yeah,
yep.
Don't think I just got bored with you and said, all right, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
If we get cut off suddenly, it means we've come to the end.
Yeah,
which
it.
I sense is about a minute or two. So I wanted to thank again all the listeners who are now back here in talking to us in secret in the archives, but also our callers today. Gar
you
the Gore and his
cow.
Ghost cow. Yep.
The ghost cow showed up several times in Frankenstein last night. Some people
and,
got
and
it.
And your name again, sir, is WXEX?
Yes. The reason I use that name is because that was the station that Gar's horror host was on.
Ah.
Originally.
So when I logged into his program, he read out the name as he's paying, as he's addressing everybody and greeting everyone. And he read the name, and it was like he had a connection automatically.
There you go.
Bam.
There you go.
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that? Wixex?
No.
WXEX.
WXEX. It was named for ex
cult
servicemen.
Really?
I take that back. That's another. That's WXGI. It was named for ex executives.
Ah.
The station no longer exists with that call sign.
Yeah.
It's now a radio station.
Oh, wow.
Cool. Yeah, I think in Kentucky or something.
Too bad it wasn't an all-horror radio station. I'd be looking at that. But thanks again, gentlemen, for calling in and sharing your insights today on Eerie House Radio. And thanks again, listeners. We'll hear from you next time. I'll be back next Saturday at 6:30 Eastern right here on Eerie House Radio. Bye-bye.
Thank you again, Sir Dale Kay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.